You opened the conference today with your sort of ideas for, I guess, the sort of ideal city. Can you tell us a little bit more about those and about the sort of garden city and what you think are the important factors that go into it?
Literally. Yes. One of the things I talked about is not specifically the form of the city, but strategies for measuring success in cities. And obviously, part of it has to do with happiness, but the measure I was proposing was a kind of self-sufficiency in which one can find what one needs nearby. And I talked a bit about this whole idea of import replacement as a city progressively generates more and more of what it needs to survive. I think everybody is in the architectural world is familiar with this idea of the ecological footprint. And we need to measure our cities against the real rates of consumption and effluent and take responsibility for it. I'm just saying to somebody else, the United States, the ecological footprint of the United States is almost twice as big as the United States. Ergo, if the whole planet starts to consume at those rates, another planet will need to be added, which is unlikely in the near term.
That was an amazing statistic. And you talked a bit about this idea of cities becoming self-sufficient. Exactly how is that sustainable?
I think in a couple of ways. In the first instance, I think it is a very useful way of measuring what's actually going on in cities.
Right, yeah.
And if you have the facts, then I think you are obligated to take responsibility. But in terms of a larger political context, I do see the power slipping away from traditional nation states and falling into the hands of transnational corporations and other slippery entities. And to me, the hedge against the power of this faceless, globalized corporate culture is strong cities, with strong governance, strong sense of locality, and strong individuality. One of the things I talked about was the fact that, as culture becomes increasingly globalized, we look around Melbourne and, 90% of these skyscrapers could be anywhere. How do we find the true sources of local culture and local initiative? I'm certainly very impressed by the way in which a distinctive architectural culture has emerged in Melbourne. It's clear that in an environmental reading of the city, particularly close attention to the particulars of the bioclimatic situation of the city will be determinant. But the idea that one tries simply to reproduce aspects of vanished cultural traditions that are meaningless at this point doesn't seem the way to go. And this, as I say, I think puts a bigger premium on artistic invention, which is kind of nice for architects, as a way of finding local particulars and then instigating them.
Yeah. I actually saw you speak back in Perth in, I think, 1993, and you came out for a student conference there.
Yeah.
And you gave a fantastic lecture, again, with a can of Coke that time. You talked a lot about your apartment in New York and that sort of local environment that obviously you're inseparable from in Manhattan. Manhattan's not a particularly green place outside of Central Park. Do you still enjoy the sort of urban reality as that, gritty, street-based, hard-edged sort of urbanity?
Oh, I adore Manhattan. I started my talk today by mentioning the fact that New York State is the second most energy-efficient state in the U.S.
Yes.
This seems counterintuitive, but it has to do with public transportation. And since we are efficient consumers of energy, relatively speaking, we are green, in terms of that definition. Certainly we can use lots more green space, something I'm working hard to promote in New York, but a narrow little island with a river on either side and the greatest park in the world is not too sloppy.
Your own work, a lot of the work you showed, there seems to be a real interest in the architectural drawing, for what I could tell. It's a real sort of crafted nature and quite an expressive nature to a lot of the schemes. Where did that particular interest in that sort of architectural language develop?
You'll have to ask my analyst. The wiggly forms in the vivid colors, every architect is responsible for reinventing architecture for him or herself.
Yeah.
So, this is a lifetime project, and we're making a little progress. what can I say? No magic wisdom, but I like dogs and airplanes and trees and wiggly forms. And
So do you think we're making progress in the way that we design cities, and the way, I mean, do you think there's hope for where we're going, or is it sort of slightly pessimistic?
I'm in an optimistic mood today. There's plenty to be pessimistic about. You know, Mike Davis's new book is called Planet of Slums, and it is true that billions of people live in the most grinding and degrading conditions imaginable. On the other hand, there are wise voices to be heard. I mean, things are particularly depressing in the moment in the United States because of the reactionary government that we have, which is fouling the planet and, disdaining science and homophobic and, all this kind of stuff. So we're all a little bit down in the U.S. at the moment. But, keep hope alive, as the man says.
One of my favourite pieces out of Exquisite Corpse is your piece on Philip Johnson, of course, died very recently, which you mentioned on the show. And I just suspected you were never that much of a fan of Philip Johnson in some ways. Do you think Philip Johnson's passing is end of a sort of era for in a certain way?
Well, let's hope so. Yeah. I mean, my only anxiety is that he's not really dead. I was speculating on some other radio program the other day that he's in the deep cryo, next to Walt Disney. And they'll thaw him out when the Fourth Reich comes to power in 2200. One shouldn't speak ill of the dead, even fascist creeps like him.
You are making reference to the suspected affiliation that Johnson had with the Nazis before the Second World War. Of course, I think he came back with the famous comment, he just liked the graphics.
Did he say that? Yeah, yeah. Like the uniforms. Yeah, right. I mean, typical glib remark. I mean, this is a man who spent 5 years of his life serving the cause of fascism, writing virulently anti-Semitic pieces and, generally disgracing himself. That's not answerable with a quip.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your time, Michael. That's great.